Spero che la maggior parte del pubblico capisca l'inglese. L'inglese di Birbaum è molto chiaro, ma.
Al Festival dell'Arte Contemporanea, Angela Vettese ha intervistato Daniel Birbaum, curatore della 53esima Biennale di Venezia. Una conversazione fra italiano e inglese per parlare del ruolo del curatore e in particolare quello del curatore di una biennale. Cosa vuol dire fare mondi e cosa definisce l'arte di oggi?
Il più giovane curatore della Biennale di Venezia e siamo davvero noi appassionati d'arte italiani molto felici che finalmente anche in Italia le cose importanti vadano alle persone giovani, che siano italiani o no, questo non ha nessuna importanza. Daniel Birnbaum viene da una lunga in realtà carriera. Non è più il tempo di dire gavetta perché è da molto tempo dean, preside, direttore di una delle scuole d'arte più importanti che ci siano in Europa, cioè quella di Francoforte. Birnbaum ha fatto parte del team curatoriale della Triennale di Yokohama, è stato curatore recentemente nel 2008 della Triennale di Torino. È un redattore della prestigiosissima rivista Art Forum, ha scritto numerosi saggi e questo piccolo libricino, i libri di solito più piccoli sono e più belli sono, questo Chronology con alcuni saggi veramente significativi sull'arte del nostro ultimo, direi, quindicennio. E ancora Birnbaum ha una serie di titoli anche accademici, ha fatto i suoi studi tra Stoccolma e Berlino, se non vado errato, e anche alla Columbia University di New York, e ha dedicato appunto la sua ultima fatica prima della Biennale di Venezia a Saturno, il dio della melanconia, il dio degli artisti, almeno da un certo punto in poi, perché si pensava che fosse fino al Rinascimento si era affidato a Mercurio il compito di tutelare gli artisti visivi come ladri. Mercurio è un ladro e ruba le immagini e così farebbero gli artisti visivi. Poi invece c'è stato un grande rivolgimento nel Rinascimento, quindi no, non ieri, grazie al quale si è pensato che gli artisti visivi sono dei mercuriali, cioè sono dei ladruncoli di immagini, ma sono soprattutto degli elaboratori di idee, di pensiero, e quindi il loro Dio è diventato un personaggio più difficile, più complicato, quel lento e oscuro Saturno, per il quale la mente spesso si confonde, per il quale la mente agisce in tempi meno rapidi, e per il quale però la ricerca umana, grazie a una dose costante di insoddisfazione, progredisce. E appunto, grazie a questo passaggio da Mercurio a Saturno, scusate l'introduzione un po' dotta, si è incominciato a pensare che gli artisti pensino, cioè si è incominciato a pensare che l'arte visiva non sia, come diceva Platone, copia della realtà, ma sia invece un modo per fare filosofia, un modo per appunto parlare di cose che hanno a che fare con tutta la vita e non solo con la decorazione, con la bellezza, eccetera. Fatta questa premessa, io vorrei incominciare a chiedere a Birnbaum, che è qui in fondo nelle vesti proprio di curatore della 53esima Biennale, vorrei chiedergli che cosa significa, domanda banale ma di rito, l'idea di fare mondi, perché questo è il titolo della Biennale, il titolo che lui ha voluto per la Biennale di Venezia e che poi ha tradotto in tante diverse lingue, ma fare, come noi sappiamo, in italiano ha una, come dire, accezione sola, cioè si fa, però in greco già ha due verbi, inglese ne ha due, tre, quattro, si può to do, si può to make, eccetera. Allora, che cosa vuol dire fare mondi? Nel senso di cosa sono questi mondi? se sono pensieri, se sono idee, se sono progettazioni, e che cosa vuol dire questo fare. E il tutto nel quadro di un'arte concepita come nata sotto Saturno, cioè come nata sotto il pensiero. Did you get what I say? Yes, okay. So you can answer in English if you prefer.
Thanks a lot, Angela. It's a great honor to be here, and I'm very happy to be with you here on the stage opening this very ambitious conference. Yes, making art can mean so many different things. And the idea with this translation game is to leave the ambivalence that I think we all share when it comes to trying to define what an artist does. And we got this Fare Monde, Making Worlds, Welten Machen translated into all the languages involved, basically. We asked people from the different pavilions, the commissioners or the curators, and I don't know what the special ring of this word is say in Hebrew or in Arabic languages. But already in the languages that I understand, or at least partly understand, such as French or a little bit Italian or German or Swedish, they have very different rings, as you said. I mean, construire le monde is a little bit more technical, perhaps. Skapa världar in Scandinavian is very—it's like almost a divine intervention. So it's as if the artist would be a kind of divine being. In German, it sounds very grand. In Italian, I don't quite know what the ring is. Fare Monde, making worlds is very craftsmanship oriented. It's like you do it as if you would do something out of clay or wood, and all of these different meanings are thus present in the title, and that was the idea, to keep it ambivalent in I hope a productive way, because I think artists, if you ask an artist what she or he does, you will get very, very different answers. Some would see it as almost a political intervention, other people will see it as a very craftsman oriented thing, other people would probably not have a problem with a more divine understanding of creativity. And that is fine. But what they all share is that it's about making, producing, doing things. So it's not really just about taking an object to Venice and showing it. And that I know is not exactly a revolutionary understanding of what the biennial can be, but it's something that I do want to emphasize, that museums can do certain things much, much better than we can. And that is very obvious when you try to get an important art piece to a biennale, that there are problems, you know, you cannot really do that. But a biennale, and I would say especially the Venice Biennale, with its incredibly challenging but also incredibly beautiful venues, can really do things. And it can trigger new productions, and it can make artists intervene or do things that are more site-specific. And so with all these different different meanings of Fare Monde, making worlds, at least I do want to emphasize the fact that it's about doing new things, that a biennale should not be a kind of annual report, it should be a space for production, experimentation, and that is maybe what all of these different meanings do share.
Ha sottolineato l'ambiguità voluta ambiguità di questa parola fare mondi, che nelle varie traduzioni può diventare intervento divino, tipo creare, oppure fare nel senso di costruire, oppure fare nel senso proprio della abilità manuale, o costruire qualcosa che ha un aspetto nuovo. Cioè, non è bello, non è interessante fare di una biennale un luogo dove si portino delle opere, punto e basta. Le opere per la Biennale di Venezia vengono fatte in modo più site specifico, comunque specifico per l'occasione, e anche in generale molto interessante lasciare aperta l'ambiguità su che cosa voglia dire fare l'artista, insomma, no? Fare dell'arte qualcosa che non ha una definizione unica e che ogni artista interpreta a modo proprio, e anche tutto il pubblico può interpretare a modo proprio. Vorrei insistere su questo punto perché noi sappiamo che c'è stata una lunghissima discussione sulla tematica dell'autore, intellettuali come Roland Barthes, Michel Foucault sono intervenuti a, direi pure, parlare male dell'autore, a dire che l'autore in fondo è un autoritario. Ci sono state tante discussioni su che cosa significhi essere un autore individuale, essere eventualmente addirittura un individuo speciale che si può fregiare proprio per questo suo essere speciale del titolo di artista. Insomma, è ancora attuale pensare che l'autore sia qualcuno che crea, e sto usando la parola autore e la parola creare proprio nel senso più classico e, se vogliamo, più vicino alla teologia, con un gergo più vicino alla teologia. E secondo punto, vorrei chiedere a Daniel Birnbaum se come curatore si sente un autore.
What do you think? I mean, to make, you know, an artwork probably is not something which happens ex nihilo, out of nowhere. But I do believe that people do create new things. And the question is, what does that mean? And that's where we start, and that's maybe where we end up in infinite philosophy seminars. But making a work or making a world is often also remaking and using worlds already there. I think we have been through 20, 30 years of post-structuralist theory about the impossibility of authentic new things, or new kind of naive expressionist or some idea about things just coming about as if they've come out of nowhere. And I have been very involved in such discussions myself. But I do think that we live in a moment when it's also interesting and maybe even important to think about what a new beginning could be. And I'm not claiming that I would know what that is, but I think that, and I hope, that a title such as Faremon, The Making Worlds, makes clear that the ambition is to look not for endings or things falling apart, but also for new beginnings. Many of the artists would, of course, insist that making things is always a sampling or a remaking, or and that is why we have some artists in the show who are not doing new things. And maybe it sounds a bit paradoxical when I say that it's all about new things, because I have involved artists who are even dead, like Øyvind Fahlström or Gordon Matta-Clark. But I think it's because they're not really dead. I think their work is still there to be reinterpreted, and. I have the feeling that some of these artists, that's why I invited or involved them, are like batteries or sources of inspiration for many, many artists. And that art is not just something which is there and given once and for all. The meaning of a piece of art is not defined the moment it happens. It happens through you and me and everyone here. And it happens through new art. That if you think about... standard example, Marcel Duchamp, and you think that the idea of a ready-made was just there from the beginning, then I think you're wrong, because I think later art has retroactively given Duchamp's work new layers of meaning. I would say that the Brillo Box by Andy Warhol, or other works by pop artists, have retroactively given Duchamp's projects another level of meaning, or many constantly new levels of meaning, and or even more art historical. Someone like Cézanne was a fantastic painter, but after Cubism, he's another painter a little bit, because we see it in a different way. And I think that is not something where we have to talk about canonical big names like this. It happens all the time. And if you say someone like Gordon Matta-Clark, who I mentioned, he died when he was very, very young, but I think his art is constantly there for many, many young people, who even students, I would say, that it's one of those artists that people return to, and someone like Rerkrit Theravania, perhaps, is not only inspired by Gordon Matta-Clark. Rerkrit Theravania is very important for Gordon Matta-Clark, because he shows that the work is constantly reread. And when that does not happen, then that artist is ready for the museum. And I'm not talking negatively about the museum as a graveyard, but the museum is a museum, and if it's not even interesting, then it goes into storage. But that's where Gordon Matta-Clark, I think, will never end up. But I would say that making and remaking and art is made out of other art often. So it's not that I think that artists in some bombastic way just create entirely new things, but I think it's the very dynamism, the very mechanism of this, which is something that art historians and art theorists analyze. But if an exhibition can make a few new productive links and show how this might be, how things work, I hope that's what we will manage to do.
You didn't answer, non hai risposto alla coda della mia domanda, cioè se tu ti senti un autore.
I think that the role of a curator can be also, just as you can interpret the role of an artist in so many different ways, maybe also the role of the curator can and should be redefined constantly by with every new task. But I do think that the key role for a curator, and now I'm talking about big group shows, not just this big monographic exhibition, but is to be a kind of accomplice, you know, someone next to the artist, making art visible. In the end, it's about making art visible as in the richest and most interesting way. If you dictate what artists are supposed to do, or even think to kind of, you know, sometimes you can be a sparring partner or someone, you know, pushing the artist even further than she or he thought, or, you know, just through new juxtapositions or helping to think about new venues to install it. But in the end, it's about stepping back and making art visible. And that is not some sort of hypocritical modesty. That's just what the curator is supposed to do, I think. A very successful curator becomes invisible in the end.
Vorrei non deludere il nostro pubblico, perché naturalmente tutti si aspettano che si parli un po' della Biennale che sta per venire, allora la metterei così. Ci sono tanti artisti che sono stati invitati, che sono di generazioni molto differenti. Chi guardi alla lista degli invitati a questa 53esima Biennale vedrà che da Rosa Barba, Pietro Roccasalva, Simone Berti, Grazia Todeschi per gli italiani, piuttosto che André Cadere, che è morto, Paul Chan, vivo, Chen Zhen, morto, Natalie Jumberg, molto giovane, Lara Favaretto, giovane e viva, Ovil Falstrom, come appena detto, non è più tra noi, Jona Friedman ha un'età quasi veneranda. Un bellissimo, credo, pezzo di questa Biennale sarà quello dedicato al gruppo Gutai, che è stato veramente aurorale per tante cose che si fanno oggi, soprattutto per la nuova maniera di approcciare, di avvicinare e di realizzare le performance. Ma appunto il gruppo Gutai è stato attivo attorno agli anni 57-58, e ancora appunto Gordon Matta-Clark, che non è più tra noi, oppure Arto Lindsay, che invece è assolutamente tra noi, addirittura con delle parate, con delle diverse modalità che sfiorano quelle da un lato della manifestazione popolare, dall'altro del teatro di piazza. Allora vediamo come appunto ci sia una fortissima intergenerazionalità, una brutta parola, ma insomma tante generazioni a confronto, e quasi un modo di considerare il tempo storico, il nostro tempo, il tempo storico nostro, come fatto di vivi, di morti, di giovani, di vecchi, che tutti insieme contribuiscono a definire un tempo, appunto. Allora, dopo tutta questa lunga premessa, chiederei a Birnbaum cosa vuol dire per lui parlare dell'oggi, perché una biennale è questo, si fa ogni due anni. Il fatto che si faccia ogni due anni significa che parla di un biennio o addirittura di un anno, parla dell'ora. Cosa vuol dire parlare dell'ora, dell'adesso? Cosa vuol dire parlare del tempo che, in cui noi viviamo, fatto appunto salvo il fatto che la sua lista di artisti è così vasta in termini di generazioni. Non è fatta di artisti che lavorano da 5 anni.
I think that everyone has a right to expect the Venice Biennale to be about us now. And it would be strange to create a show which is about something else, not about our moment. So the question is, how do you do that? Since I'm a director of an art school, maybe some people thought I would only show very, very young artists. And that could have been a possibility, perhaps. But somewhere I think that, it's okay to have this curiosity for always new things. But on the other hand, I think art has a different kind of temporality than, say, what you can measure with a clock. And if you want to understand where we are now and who we are, we have to look back into at least the recent past. And it's not about writing history, it's maybe rather about writing genealogy, from starting with who we are now, but trying to understand us through things that have that are already in the past, but that is still active somehow. So it's right, I have tried to put together a show with a few things that are actually more historical references, but I don't think they are historical in the sense that they would be past. I think they are recent past in the sense that they're still active. So it's a mix of these different things. And then we have some very young artists who I don't really exactly know how important they will be in 10 or 20 years, but one should also try such things. And then there's some artists who are in the middle of their careers and who I have worked with a lot before, but I think as a curator it must always be a mixture of things that you trust and that you know are of importance and you cannot reinvent yourself also every moment. Certain artists and collaborations with people like Rilke Tiravania or other people who I've worked with so much, it would be almost strange not to have them involved in this project. So it's a mix of a few more historical projects that I believe are, you know, important tools for our understanding of our moment now. A few established people and a few very young people. So this sounds not very original, but that's, I think, a way to kind of define the now or the today in a richer sense. I mean, I think also that that art works a little bit differently than, say, and should work differently than the fashion industry or pop music or sports, where you know every second year there is a new generation that dominates everything, and that's just unavoidable, I think, with a few exceptions. But you know, certain artists disappear and then come back 20 years later with an incredible new oeuvre, or from Duchamp to Louise Bourgeois, we know that, you know, there can be other kind of temporalities in an individual artist's development, and an artist can thrive at the age of 78, and it's maybe not the most usual, but it does happen, and we have not installed anything in Venice yet, but with one big exception, that a big group of young students just finished an installation with Jona Friedman. And Jona Friedman is now 87 maybe, or 86 or something like that. And I think he's still totally relevant. And the relevance is also shown in younger artists. Again, that idea that he's not only influencing younger people, but through Olafur Eliasson or Thomas Saraceno or other people, one can see that his work is reread constantly. So through the younger people, his art is kind of kept alive and reinterpreted and maybe misinterpreted also. And that's fine, because I think there is no such thing as a correct analysis of a piece of art. They're just more or less interesting ones.
Vorrei, appunto, partendo dalla presenza di Jona Friedman, che è un architetto, e di Ardo Lindsay, che è un teatrante in definitiva, vorrei chiedere a Daniel Birnbaum anche il suo pensiero su una possibile o difficile o impossibile addirittura interdisciplinarità. Cioè, L'arte contemporanea, più che in passato, si è mescolata, penso per esempio alla Documenta del 1997, quella diretta da Catherine David con tanti architetti e Rem Koolhaas tra questi, si è mescolata ad altre discipline. A volte però questo ha lasciato un senso di scarsa consapevolezza da parte del pubblico, cioè un pubblico che va a vedere una biennale architettura ha tutta spesso un altro, ha tutta un'altra valigia di conoscenze, un altro bagaglio di conoscenze che chi va a vedere una biennale di arte visiva non ha e viceversa. Allora vorrei un suo pensiero sulla sua biennale in relazione alla interdisciplinarità, ma in generale vorrei un suo pensiero su questo punto così importante, in qualche modo così dolente, anche così storicamente frequentato, perché non ce lo stiamo chiedendo in realtà dal 97. Il problema dell'opera d'arte totale è uno dei problemi della cultura occidentale degli ultimi due secoli. Si può pensare di mettere tante discipline insieme sperando che il pubblico le possa capire e intersecare?
I remember Gabriel Orozco told me once that in the late 90s, if someone doesn't, if you think about an artwork and you don't say what it is, then it used to be that one would think it's a painting. But in the late 90s, he said the video projection has become the golden frame of the 90s. That if you don't say anything, then probably it's going to be a video projection. but fashions change, and it's true that we've been through a number of close dialogues between disciplines. Just in the last couple of years, there has been a very close link between art and architecture. And of course, art inspired by architecture is something very different from architecture. Even if there are architects like Peter Cook or Cedric Price or the whole Archigram group or Jona Friedman, who maybe haven't built so much when it comes to real structures, they've more been thinking about the very possibility of building things and what could the built world look like in the future. And so it's visionary architecture or intellectual architecture, and something which is pretty close to the intellectual artistic endeavor. And yet, I guess there is a difference between applied art and art. Don't ask me exactly what it is, but I have the feeling that it's a little bit different if you are a designer supposed to do, if you're an industrial designer, or if you're an architect building something that has to work, or if you do an architecturally inspired installation in an exhibition. But anyhow, there has been this close dialogue with architecture. For a little while, there was a very close link to fashion. A few years, Art Forum looked like every issue was about fashion also. Of course, there's been a close link to film, in the world of cinema, with Douglas Gordon and all these people who have a kind of very close relationship to film, although they use film as a ready-made material, perhaps, and use it in a different way. So I guess we've been through at least 10 or 15 years of very close dialogues. It's almost as if art has become a name for that, that almost anything could be in the art world. You know, it could be literature, it could be theater, it could be cinema, it could be all of these things. But it's in a zone where these things are used rather than just where these things are discussed rather than just used according to the rules that have been defined by these disciplines. And at the same time, I think we have been. Things have become more specialized, that people who know everything about art and the visual arts aren't necessarily so interested in contemporary poetry. Or even smaller worlds like dance, people know everything about the most advanced developments in dance, but not really what's going on in cinema. And it's interesting, I think it's challenging and interesting if one can break that a little bit. And I shouldn't pretend that I'm some sort of a Renaissance person who can know all these different things. But if one can create interesting links, I think it's a good thing. The Venice Biennale, the art exhibition, is an exhibition, so we will not try to transform it into a performance festival or a poetry slam or something, but there will be a few projects that do create bridges. And I'm not quite sure what they mean, but William Forsythe, the choreographer, who's, I guess, one of the leading people in the dance world, he's doing an installation in an old building that you have never seen before, because it's at the very end of the Arsenale. We will have poetry through a group of poets from Moscow. It's called the Moscow Poetry Club. And it seems that in the Russian context, there is a closer link between poetry and visual arts than we have in, say, Germany or I think Italy now. We'll see how that works. It's, you know, the Venice Biennale has all these disciplines, but not literature. And we're not going to turn the Venice Biennale into a literature festival, but there will be poetry readings in there. And you mentioned Arto Lindsay. I think he has invented a new format that is not so clear what it is. I mean, on the one hand, we know it. He lives in Brazil and there are parades everywhere, and in Venice there's a carnival, so it's not totally unheard of. But he's trying to produce something which is somewhere between a parade and a moving sculpture. So it's about finding forms of expression that are not so totally defined yet. This wasn't much of an answer. It was just a kind of development of your of what you already said.
Allora, vorrei adesso parlare di lettere. Cioè, noi siamo qui pieni di C. Però c'è una lettera che ha a che fare con la C di contemporaneo e sembra quasi il suo contrario, ed è la O. È il compimento della C e sarebbe la O di obsolescenza. Obsolescenza è una parola molto usata da un filosofo amato da Daniel Birnbaum, cioè da Walter Benjamin, e vuol dire la decadenza delle cose, il venir meno, lo svanire. Il presente non può restare tutto, anche se noi abbiamo computer che archiviano tutto, anche troppo, ma sappiamo che poi bisogna fare ordine e per forza dobbiamo accettare con inevitabile senso di pulizia questo venir meno di alcune cose, questo aspetto dell'obsolescenza del presente in favore di una sedimentazione di ciò che resta ed è più di valore. Allora, una biennale ha a che fare con l'obsolescenza, perché come Daniel Birnbaum ha più volte sottolineato, non tutto ciò che si mostra si pensa che resterà di qui a 20 anni. È anche una scommessa fare una biennale, cioè entro che limiti pensi che le cose che tu esponi saranno, tra 20 anni obsolete? 50%?
The question is then what it means to be obsolete in art, I think in the world of new media and communication systems, and every old medium is kind of outmoded and in that sense obsolete. You can see it in an art school. I'm sure it's the same in this art school where you work, that we used to have painting and sculpture and film and all of these different things, and now it seems that everything is, what do you say, convening towards the same computer programs. That in the end, it's all about a hard disk that takes care of all those things. And if you're working with sound, or if you're working with film or photography, it doesn't really matter, you work with the same computers. And in relationship to that world, where everything is about new programs, and I think art can use old techniques that from a kind of technology point of view are actually outmoded, but that can represent a certain kind of friction or even resistance to that totally frictionless world of new technology. And even photography is over, no? I mean, most people take photos with their mobile phones and it's all downloaded, and so we've been through this now with other mediums, and yet I think artists can work with all of these different things. We had William Kentridge, the South African artist, as a kind of guest teacher in our school about a year ago or 2 years ago. And we have this old print shop with lots of old machines that we don't even know what they are. And the more old and obsolete and ridiculous looking, the more interested he was in them. So all these new old techniques of producing pictures, for him, seemed to represent a kind of hope that there are histories there that should not be forgotten, and that can kind of create new possibilities, although the technology itself is over. I mean, it has to do with the conversation that is infinite and ongoing about painting, and when people say, "Will there be painting in the show?" It's often phrased as if painting would something that we return to. It's often a return to painting, as if painting would always have to be something about going back to something. I hope that painting can also be a tool for the future. It can be a new form. You know, it can be tools for new things. So I think it's in art, things that may seem outmoded and old in a world of frictionless communication actually represent great tools for remembering that time is not just a kind of basic progress into some sort of there's a more multi-layered history there.
La Biennale di Venezia è stata curata in modi molto diversi tra loro, da storici, un'idea di gruppo di lavoro e poi un'idea comunque di delega del curatore. In questo caso invece mi sembra che Daniel Birman deleghi relativamente poco, cioè abbia accolto su di sé in una maniera, vorrei dire quasi tradizionale, la curatela completa della mostra. Ci ha già spiegato che per lui il maggiore risultato di un curatore è quello di diventare alla fine trasparente, però sono sicura che non intende essere un semplice facilitator, cioè non intende essere un semplice facilitatore, uno che rende facili le cose in maniera che accadano. Vorrei chiedergli, insomma, qual è la sua maggiore ambizione, come vorrebbe essere, che tipo di curatela vorrebbe si ricordasse di lui, in che modo l'ha impostata e in che modo vorrebbe, ora che siamo a un passo dalla realizzazione, che si realizzasse, e nel mondo dei curatori o nel mondo della storia, di come si curano le mostre, nel mondo della forma mostra, che è come la forma sonata, insomma, è una forma del fare storia e del fare arte. Come vorrebbe esserci? Che parola nuova intende portare nello sviluppo dell'essere curatore?
I agree that the Venice Biennale has been staged in many, of course, in many, many different ways. And I think if we think about the ones we remember, there are different reasons for us to remember them. I think the first time I was in the Venice Biennale as a kind of grown-up person, I even wrote about it, was in 93. And that was an important Biennale, I think, because, at least for me, and I think for I would think for you, because we're about the same age, that the whole 90s were present suddenly, and that has become clear to me retroactively that there was Damien Hirst, there was Matthew Barney, there was Rilke Teravania. They were all kind of not our generation of artists was just suddenly there, and some of them had maybe already been, and another one, a few came later. But that's a successful Biennale in the sense that it really introduces a new generation of important people. And then there are biennales that maybe in an interesting and experimental way work with the very format of what the show can be. And when I'm saying that the curator should become invisible, I'm not claiming that there could not be interesting intellectual work with the exhibition as a format. It's true. An exhibition is like a novel or a symphony, or it's an artistic format, even if it always involves a collective. And there has been several that are important, but I think I'm not sure in what way my show will be successful, if it will be successful, if it's a little bit of both, that it's actually some new artists and also testing many different ways of showing art within one show. The idea that it's just one exhibition, I have to say, is not really my decision. It was very clear that the board of the Biennale wanted an exhibition that remained one show. And it has to do with the fact that the Venice Biennale is, without any comparison now, the biggest art event in the world, with a record number of nations, a record number of collateral events, many other things that are not officially part of the Venice Biennale, but, you know, ambitious things from very large Pinot or Guggenheim to smaller things. It's just an infinite number of different arrangements, and therefore the board of the Biennale kind of insisted that we appoint a director who does one show. But that said, I think I'm not the kind of megalomaniac type of curator who tries to dictate everything myself. I'm doing the show in close dialogue with one other person called Jochen Foltz, who lives in Brazil, and who's someone I've worked with before. So it's a very dialogical approach. We're trying to talk with the artists, finding the right places for them to be. And I have a little group of people who know much more about specific parts of the world. I have Savita Apte from India, I have Hu Fang from China, I have Tom Eccles from the US. So people who help me more as a kind of advisory board, so to say, correspondents we call them. So it is about the dialogues with different, with colleagues and experts, and in the end with the artists themselves. I think it's a rather heterogeneous event, although it's one exhibition. It has lots of different themes woven through the show, and I think the richness and the challenge and the possibility of the Venice Biennale has to do with the unique venues that we have. This central pavilion of exhibitions, and we have the Arsenale, which is not only easy, it's also, you know, so monumental partly that it's, you know, quite a challenge for artists. And we have this new garden, the Garden of the Virgins, with some old, almost ruin-like buildings and an incredibly beautiful, like a jungle out there. So it's, in the end, I don't have to invent new display features or new exhibition models, because they're there to be used. We don't have to force artists into every corner, but there is a beautiful tower that you will see for the first time in this year that an Indian artist called Nikhil Chopra uses. And Dominique Gonzalez Förster is doing something rather secretive in this almost jungle-like garden. So I think it's about using the spatial possibilities and finding the right artists or the right venues for the right artists. And that said, I do still think it's not some sort of silly humbleness that once the art is there and it's displayed, the curatorial signature should kind of become invisible. Interlocking.